1965, color began to show its ugly head, and we began to realize that color was the one thing that would really top off television as being the real entertainment media of the public. There was very little color film available. We'd have to use color movies and so forth, but that would entail a complete changeover of all of our equipment. So we decided that we would then at that time go through RCA and buy RCA color cameras and color reproduction equipment, at which time we did. And I've forgotten how about, we must have bought about 15 color cameras. And it was at that time that we also decided we had to have remote units. And we bought one in Little Rock some little time earlier that was a very good one. It worked fine on black and white and all. And it was through this remote unit that KATV originated all of the school crisis of Eisenhower and Phobos and so forth. So we decided that we'd build some color remote units. We bought some old post offices. The federal government had what they call rolling post offices that had would pick up the mail at, over a general route for quite a ways, and they had several people inside the truck sorting the mail as it went from one location to the other. And they were enlarging their operation some, so they sold some of these old traveling post offices. And we bought three or four of them and sent them back and had them remanufactured, Crown Coach Company in California. And out of it came the color film cameras, and then we realized too that we were going to have to equip everything for color, and sure enough, the old transmitter or the old antenna, Little Rock, the transmitter we first put in would do some color, some color. So we got by with that for a while before we had to change all the rest. But color did add an enormous dimension to television. It was the icing that went on the cake. And so we went ahead and equipped that. And then by that time, John Marjorie and I had been in the television business for quite a little while, quite a number of years. We had got our business finally turned around where it was making a pretty good profit. And our lawyer said to us, he said, if you don't split this business up, since there are two families in it. My family were up and grown, and John's was coming on a little small fella. So we decided after his consultation that we ought to sit down and divide up the whole shebang, the grocery company, peanut company, and everything that we had, including the television. So we just decided we would divide it up, sit across the table and work out any kind of problems we had. And that we began to do. It took us about 9 months to finally work that out. And that did come about, in which John took KWTV Channel 9 in Oklahoma City, Marjorie and I took Channel 7, Channel 8. I took the peanut company, and John took the grocery company. We wound up with a pretty good with a very peaceful and quiet division, and each of us started out on our own to try to make our way. And as luck will have it, it has worked out very, very well. But we've had very close ties between the three stations, which has been a great advantage to us along the way. And another thing that we did, I've forgotten when the date was, but you realize that the only way we had of transporting signal was through microwaves, and it was terribly expensive. If we had a catastrophe in Oklahoma City and wanted to show it in Tulsa and Little Rock, it cost an absolute arm and a leg to buy public facilities. So we decided, well, we'll work out our own way. And Vietnam War had just ended, and there was a fellow come to see us named Everett Schultz from California, from San Diego, and he'd built a system for ABC, and he thought maybe this system might work all right out to the Midwest. And so we did work it out, and he had been working with the Army, blowing up bridges with little airplanes. Take the little Cessna pull pusher, the Mixmaster we call it, and load a bomb in it and make a drone out of it so that he could guide it from one place to another and it run it into hit a bridge and blow it up. Well, when we got to ABC, it already did most of the engineering on it. It was working very well out in California. We thought, well, what the heck? We'll equip our tower at Oklahoma City, Tulsa, and Little Rock, and we'll put a microwave between the two towers and work out a system whereby we will be in complete contact with all three stations. I know about that time a tremendous tornado went through Dallas and Wichita Falls and I don't know where else. And I thought to myself, now if we had this deal working, we could have sent a truck with a microwave on top of it out about halfway from Oklahoma City to Wichita Falls, and they could send us back the material on the tornado area, and then we'd go through the microwave truck and then be able to reach KWTV's tall tower. And we had decided it could be done where we would link up everything and we could be in constant contact from the Mississippi River almost to the Texas border. And we did then start out on the long journey of installing that system. And I must say that it worked very well, but except always that we had a lot more severe thunderstorms in this area than we did anywhere else. And Everett Schultz, when he was working with the Army, had found out that the if you located the transmitter of a microwave on the base of a tower, that the line loss and the line to the top of the tower created a great deal of problem because not enough juice got to the top and out. So Don, he had gone to work and developed a deal whereby you could put the transmitter at the very top of the tower. And when we did that, the whole thing began to work like a clock. And then it's strange to see that this was a forerunner of what we now have today, in that it used microwave to the fullest extent. And then, of course, the next jump that occurred some good many years later was the satellite, ground-to-satellite, which is today in use and interconnects the entire world. I know I was sitting in an ABC meeting in California one time at the Century Plaza, and Leonard Goldenson, head of ABC, had said, well, now, he made a great big hullabaloo about this, that ABC could be in touch with any point in the world within 3 hours from the time of whatever they had, from the happening, whatever they wanted to cover. But this was after the satellite communication had come into it. And I thought, what a tremendous thing to be able to have a story with color out of any place on Earth within 3 hours. And that, I think, was pretty accurate, and he did it. So our first attempt to interconnect our stations was done by our own microwave system, and it worked very well. Previous to that time, we had always the problem of getting product to the place where we could transmit it or could use it. Throughout the years, We were always slow and I just never did work too well. So I thought, since I'd been in the airplane business for years and flown airplanes all over the country, I'd just use that. So we bought some little small Cessna four passenger planes, and we had one that we put in Little Rock, and I've forgotten what it was called, and one in Tulsa, and I think we had one over here. And it meant that if we could train a cameraman to fly, or got a hold of a flyer as a cameraman, it would work out very good. We could take a reporter and cameraman, and then increased our coverage into small areas a very great deal, and made it possible for us to have back to the studio in time for the newscast. And what we did, we take the airplane, the cameraman, and the newscaster, and he'd fly out from Oklahoma City to Enid, and would pick up a story and be back down here, and always just fly over the station or land at a close airport, and somebody run out and pick up the film and all, and come back, and it made it gave us a lot better coverage than we would have had otherwise. Those three little airplanes were a lot of fun and worked out very well, and the good Lord was good to us, and we never had a single accident of any kind. But when you look at this is a hell of a story. We're talking about three television stations put on by folks that had never seen it.
We are grateful to Nancy and Richard Sevenoaks, daughter and son-in-law of Jimmy Lake, for providing this recording. James C. Lake was 86 when he died, July 3rd, 2001.